Oh my gosh, welcome to the Biting Lemons bathtub.
Thank you.
Season one. I'm just so grateful that you were willing to trust me and this. And I want to share with you why I invited you.
Okay.
Several years ago now, I did the Urban Tantra training. I mean, I was living in Spain, so it was quite a while ago. And that training was with Barbara Kareles, as you know, and you were one of the facilitators. I was really impressed with how comfortable you made it for everybody in the room to be able to juggle with topics that are sensitive, bring up all kinds of stuff, even if we think we're really okay within us and around us. I loved how you approached all those topics. I was impressed by it and I felt good about it, especially that that particular course, there were one or two men who were actually finding it difficult to be in that environment. I was listening to their feedback and I was curious about their experience. I was having my own experience and I was with the facilitators and how everyone embraced it. And I just came out of that training and just felt very much more relaxed about gender, about sexuality and gender, which before I'd kept them very separate, kink and all kinds of stuff around Urban Tantra and the training that it involved. That's why you're here in the bar.
Wow, fantastic. Well, I love Barbara. I love the Urban Tantra, you know, professionals training. I think it's amazing. I've been with it since she's been doing it in the UK.
Wow, brilliant.
Barbara and I go back further than her doing the things in the UK. So yeah. I was super excited to be invited along. So I've been doing it ever since. In fact, I'm doing it again in July with her here.
Brilliant, brilliant. I think it's a really good training, so
yes,
I highly recommend
really
it. One of the things that I felt comfortable with you to invite and to talk about was the whole topic of gender.
Yes.
I feel like, I don't know, if I really think about what can I talk to you about, there's probably 10 topics that I think I'd like a whole bath on. So it was a bit of a choice for me because if I'm really sitting here just as me, I probably want some other topics for us to dive into. But I'm not sitting here as me. I want to sit here with the voices that I've had in my awareness for over the last 2 or 3 years, whether it be clients or parents of clients or friends or just people in the community who are yearning to get more articulate and to feel better about how they approach anything to do with gender. I thought, who is the best person who I feel comfortable with to talk about something that actually is quite sensitive? It's you.
Excellent.
Are you up for it?
I am absolutely up for it. I'm older than I look, as I mentioned earlier. And
that means... Are we allowed to say your age?
Yeah, I'm 60 next year.
How is this possible?
My eldest daughter just turned 40.
What?
And that's like... Wait, no, I'm only 30-odd, right?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so that's a thing. I have a bunch of kids and grandkids. A wonderful, wonderful life. Very rich. Very diverse, and they all know that I'm the weird one. And I do, and if there's anything weird in life, I'm knowledgeable about it.
I'm
one of those sorts of people that if I find a topic interesting, I want to know everything.
So yeah.
Classic sort of ADHD brain.
Right, brilliant.
Have to have a hyper focus.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well.
So, trans issues, gender issues, I've done an awful lot of trainings on those in universities, kink events, you know, you name it. And of course in the psychology community. So I've done keynote speeches at annual psychotherapy conferences.
Brilliant.
Like for pink therapy and stuff.
Brilliant.
So talking about gender is easy. It's in my ballpark.
Yeah.
And I'm also old enough, a little more thick skinned, so I don't mind the uncomfortable questions.
Yeah.
And I can tell you how to phrase it better for people who aren't as thick skinned as I am.
Thank you. This is what we're going to need today.
Okay,
definitely.
Cool.
But I'm really curious about you as well. And I think I want people to know you more as well. So can you, better than I would, share what is in your world?
Right.
What do you spend your time doing? What are you passionate about? Where's your voice?
Okay. Oh, it's a big question.
Yeah, where
it's
to
begin?
It's
a big life. It really is, as I say, with
you
a bunch
ram-packed.
Of kids and grandkids,
yeah.
not to mention several relationships. And my work. My work is my passion. That's where my voice really lies. Probably those in my personal life would disagree and say it was in my personal life.
Okay.
But for me, my voice is, my passion is my work. And in the last decade or two, that has ramped up and ramped up and sort of exploded exponentially.
Wow.
So I had a period of grief a few years back. And for 2 years, I kept my head down. So I sort of disappeared from public consciousness a bit.
Yeah.
But that was intentional. I needed some time for myself. Carried on working. I see many, many clients. I have sort of, I see up to 7 clients a day. So it's quite a lot.
One-to-one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
group?
Relationship therapy as
and
well. So whether that be a couple or moresomes, you know, that I work with that too.
Yeah.
But I also work with, my umbrella is GSRD, that's gender, sex and relationship diversities. So that's all of the LGBTQIA+, the consensual non-monogamous, CNM, that's a long phrase of polyamory. Polyamory is only one type of CNM.
Ah.
I ended up writing a chapter for the therapist's manual by Pink Therapy called Relationally Queer, and I wrote the chapter on CNM for that.
Brilliant.
Just to sort of illustrate that it's not just this one true way of everybody loves everybody else, blah, blah, blah. It's lots of different ways of doing non-monogamy.
Yeah.
So that's a passion project as well. And of course, kink. So just won't go into that. But I'm the head of a UK leather family, which is a sort of formal thing. And that's since the 90s. And I was actually the first non-gay male leather family in the UK.
Really?
Because it was very gay male leather was the thing.
Okay, so actually there's lots of people.
There's lots of people into leather now.
Wow.
And the community's exploded. But back in the 90s, I was the first sort of leather family that wasn't just almost exclusively gay male.
Yeah.
There wasn't
How
a gay
big
male.
Is that community?
The leather community itself?
Yeah.
Massive. Worldwide. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it began in America, of course. So there's that side of my life, the leather. There's the CNM side of my life. There's my kids and grandkids. My family is fundamentally important to me. But my work takes up probably the majority of my time. I have to fit everything else around the outskirts of it.
Yeah, and you're
and
still getting
energy
from it?
And that's either one-on-one clients or doing workshops or, you know, lecturing. I've done 7 UK university, you know, sort of
amazing
places. So always being invited for interviews and podcasts. I've been on the radio a couple of times, been on TV many years ago. So yeah, it's always following my work, following my passion topics.
What is the top 3 topics for you?
Well, unfortunately, because of the socio-political climate, trans is right up there.
Mm.
Of course, probably the number one most important thing right now, keeping trans people alive, keeping them going. That's probably my most important. Kink because of the leather aspect, because of the family. So my leather family is my chosen family.
Nice.
And they're not all submissives that belong to me.
Okay.
There are several of those, but the others are couples who've shown up with similar principles, who want to live with. So there's an ideology behind leather. It's not just about hot, sweaty leather sex and kink stuff. There's an ideology around truth, respect and honour, integrity, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And so people have been around us for years and years and years, and eventually they've sort of earned my family leather, so they've become a part of the leather family by loyalty and wanting to live the right way, basically wanting to not be a dick, wanting to be a decent person in the world. So yes, I would say the top 3 would be the trans because it's currently a serious issue. The kink because it's around my leather family. It's got a lot of core stuff about my life in there. And CNM, consensual non-monogamy, because that is becoming more and more commonplace. You know, my relationships, polyamorous relationships, were almost before it was cool and trendy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very weird. I had to go into school and have conversations about the kids in this environment. I had social services investigate. I had the whole gamut.
When you started that, did you know other people that you could reach out to, or were you very much alone?
I felt very much alone. I did know 3 or 4 people, but that's not a lot.
No.
Nowadays, I know hundreds, you know, many, many. I mean, I did, I speak for Poly Day, which was an annual conference for polyamorous folk. For many years, but it began with a small idea in Leicester of all places,
right.
And then headed to London because, of course, it exploded. It got bigger and bigger. So I do talks on things like polyamory and mental health, polyamory and parenting, etc., etc. So yes,
okay.
Those are my top three. Answer for a quick
question.
And they're
big threes, aren't they?
Yes,
that's a big three.
They don't call it the work for nothing.
Mm.
It is my work.
Mm.
You know, I'm always being told I look tired at the moment, and I am. Mm. But I took some time out, and last year I emerged from my grief, butterfly blossomed, and hence I've got moths and butterflies all over me, because I've metamorphosed many times in my life. And I decided to just say yes to everything. So you got that to thank.
Thank you for that.
So I did, and by the end of the year I'd won 2 awards. So
amazing.
That's what you get by sticking your head above the parapet.
What were the awards?
They were both role model of the year. One was for Pride in Diversity, which is run in Leeds. Fabulous, fabulous bunch of people. So that was role model of the year 2025.
Amazing.
For Pride in Diversity. And then I was nominated for the same role, role model of the year in LGBT, by the National Diversity Awards.
Wow.
Now, I was one of the 8 finalists, and we all went to the big event, and it was huge tables set like a wedding in a cathedral. I mean, it was
amazing.
Just an extraordinary event, and I felt like I was, you know, a mouse among legends.
Oh.
The trans woman who won is absolutely 100% deserving. In fact, I knew several of those 8 people personally, and I'd have been more than happy for
any of them
to win it. But then one of the judges came to me and said, No, you're missing this, because here's your certificate for being one of the final 8 out of 80,000 nominees.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was quite mind-blowing.
I mean,
but
that's
fabulous.
Mega, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, fabulous. So yes, my work is finally being recognised after all these years, and I love that. It's really nice to know. It's not just about the fact I'm a trans man. It's not just about the fact that I'm polyamorous. It's not that I'm a leader in all these fields.
Yeah.
It's for my work.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot.
It does, and I think it's so nice to hear and feel someone who is embodying what they believe and who they are through their work. This is a luxury position also to be able to have lived a life where you've come to this position.
Yeah.
I want to think about the audience being the people that I've been speaking to deliberately for this podcast.
Okay.
People who are frightened in some way to speak up, ask questions, have their insecurities met. They don't want to upset. They don't want to offend.
Frightened of getting it wrong.
Frightened of getting it wrong.
Yep, yep.
Or looking foolish, because by now we should know more.
Right.
That's a comment I've had quite a lot. And I think what I want to start with is you've just said, you know, me as a trans man. Some people would immediately say, what does it even mean to be a trans man? Can we start there about
Absolutely.
Your journey?
Oh my goodness, yes. So I wasn't born this handsome.
I think there's something going on with your genes for sure.
Yes.
I mean,
my mother always
this?
Looked beautiful and young, always did.
Wow.
And as a teenager, of course, it galled me because it's like everybody would think she was my sister.
Oh,
now
my
I'm
gosh.
Like, thank God for those genetics. Thanks, Mum. You know, I really appreciate it. But I was a very pretty thing with a very pretty name, and everybody expected me to be pretty and smart and so forth. Frankly, I could kick ass in that mode. I could be the power. If I was going to be a woman, I would be the powerful woman that walks into a room and all heads turn.
Yeah.
So I absolutely high-femmed it. There's a phrase we talk about in trans communities called the dying swan.
Okay.
And it's when we try so hard to be what we're supposed to be until we give up, until we say, actually, I can't do this anymore. Yeah, so that's the dying. So my
that's
dying swan was high femme, thigh highs, big hair, red lips, red nails, the whole the whole palaver. And absolutely, I walked into a room and people listened, heads turned. But the funny thing about that internally is, which some people who knew me from back then really struggle with, because they saw this powerful, confident woman.
Yeah.
But inside, I just thought I was a really shit woman.
Right.
I thought it was a really crap. I thought I was, everybody had got the handbook. A little bit like being neurodivergent. Everybody gets the handbook of how life works and we don't.
Mm.
I felt like everybody else had got the handbook on being a woman, and I was trying to pick it up as I went along.
And you just couldn't get
just
it.
Just trying to ace it. Well, even when I knew I'd aced it.
Yeah, you couldn't.
I just felt like I wasn't a good enough woman.
Yeah.
Until the day when I realised, oh shit, I'm not. So in my day, because I'm an old fart, there was no such thing as there was no internet for a start.
No, which is huge.
There was no conversation around transgender. The closest I remember coming in my younger years was the transvestite entertainers at the Working Man Club.
Wow,
so the drag queens,
yeah.
Basically.
What part of the UK are you raised
so
in?
I was born in London,
okay.
Raised all over the place. So
right.
I lived in Norfolk, we lived in Derbyshire, and that's where I stayed, where
okay.
I ended up. So it was a little bit local bumpkin type world, a little bit off the grid.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any city to you know, I was too young when we left the city. I didn't really have that kind of background to fall back on or people. You know, there's just less people.
Yeah.
So when I first discovered that not only were genuine transgender women a thing, there were trans men too.
Mm.
And it blew my mind because I was like, oh shit, clink, 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 the dominoes all
fell. Everything
fitted.
Just fell into place.
My aha moment, so everybody talks about their aha moment, was doing that whole big hair, big lips, big nails thing, was getting ready to go out at night, going out, yeah? So we'd go out to a club or whatever. And it would take me 2 hours farting about. And there'd be a part, they used to joke about it at home, who's going to clean up after? because there'd be clothes littered everywhere, all over the bed and all the rest of it. And I'd finally look in the mirror and go, I can carry that. I can work with that. And I'd go.
That's a long stress.
But my aha moment
was
the day that I did this. And I was in a long, red, crushed velvet, slit to the thigh, sheath dress. Heels, hair, nails. I mean, you can't even see it now. But
I could have thought
I was fucking magnificent, if I say so myself.
Yeah.
And I looked in the mirror and I went, I'd tap that. Wait a minute. I'm sure people don't think like that. And it cascaded into my head. What I was creating was what I desired.
Yeah.
Not who I was.
Yeah, amazing.
So that was my aha moment. That started the journey.
Yeah. What stage of life are you at now?
So I was married with kids. I had kids growing up. I had no possible way. This can't be happening. This can't be real. I can't do this. I've got kids. I've got parents. I've got all those things. In the moment, I wanted to never wear a dress again.
Right.
I didn't want to have to put heels on again.
Ever. Yeah.
I didn't want to have to do makeup again.
Yeah.
I just had this moment of like sloughing off a huge smelly old great coat, like a forces heavy coat, and I felt like it just dropped off my shoulders. So I did it in small ways, little bits at a time, trying to make it easier for everybody, which it doesn't in the long term, I learned.
Were you talking about this to
not
people?
Massively, only two partners. Turns out my husband wasn't gay. There's a thing. So that obviously didn't work out. I'd always known that I was omnisexual. I think even trees are sexy, you know.
Just explain for people who don't know what that is.
Right, okay. Pansexual is the current favourite word. Bisexual was used for many, many years. Still is by many communities, many people.
Yeah.
Omnisexual, because like I say, even trees are sexy.
Yeah.
Means that I don't actually care what genitals a body has.
Yeah.
I love bodies.
Yeah.
Sexually, my attraction is to bodies.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of neither straight nor gay. I just find bodies beautiful.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
And that for me is what omnisexual. People call it pansexual nowadays.
Okay. Right.
It's the more common. It means gender doesn't matter.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was certainly something I always felt. Even as a teenager, I can classically remember being like drooling over Adamant because it was neither male or female. It was that androgyny twist.
Yes.
There was something in there that really attracted
me. Absolutely.
Once you finally get set free, once you finally feel able to do so, and there's lots of struggles, you have losses, some people support you, you think they wouldn't have, some people who don't support you, you think they would have, you know, there's lots of sort of family, friends and stuff, losses and sacrifices. But when you finally feel free to do so, what you tend to do is this, boink, the pendulum swims all the other way, I'm sinking in the bath.
You are. Let me put my foot right under your arse there.
Thank you. The pendulum swung because I was going to the gym, I'd got a buzz cut, I'd done all the things that you're supposed to.
This as well?
Absolutely loving it. And then I caught myself in some shop windows one day as I was walking past and I had to do a double take because I didn't recognise myself at all.
Wow. Thought, were you like, oh, he's all right?
No, I literally thought, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And I went home and promptly stopped all sorts of things and changed, because I realised that I'd swung all the way that way. And I am not a G.I. Joe. I'm a bit more faggy than that.
Okay.
So, you know, as far as gender's concerned, most people who transition do that. Yeah. Whichever way they fling completely the other way, yeah, until they find them. It's called, yeah, a spectrum for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it is literally,
totally,
most people
that
aren't here or here.
Mm.
You know, from feminine men, masculine women, you know, and so on and so forth. Mm. And of course, non-binary now. That's,
yeah,
fantastic.
And we want to dip that in and out of everything to, yeah, know where we want to land.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to being a long-haired bloke, because,
okay,
I loved my long hair, but I had to cut it short to start to feel like recognised as myself in the world.
Yes.
Someone had other ideas, so that didn't work out for me. Sadly, I grew hair there instead of there.
It's a good look, though.
Yeah, well, but I grew into it.
You've made it work.
The first day that I decided was because I saw some photographs and my hair had got so patchy. Not just like the classic men on top male pattern baldness,
yeah,
but patchy everywhere.
Wow.
But it was long enough that it didn't show when I was stood still.
Right.
I saw some photos outside where it was blown in the wind.
You were like,
and I was like,
yeah,
one thing I cannot do is scruffy. So
right,
off it came. And of course, I ended up with the white helmet. When you first shave, your hair has never seen daylight, your head. So I had this white helmet, and it took about 2 summers for that to disappear.
Oh, bless you.
Then I was able to grow into it, and I'm pretty much happy. It suits me far more now.
Yeah. What a ride.
Yes, it has been a ride. It's been harder for some than others.
Who's been the loss that you maybe still feel is a loss?
Probably my father. Mm. Because he put up with all sorts of me being different in every possible way in life.
Mm.
You know, he was like, as long as you're happy, that's all I care about. Except when it comes to my gender, then he was not happy.
He couldn't do it.
And we lost our relationship completely.
And he's still the one who passed a couple of years ago. Right, wow.
So that was a hard one.
Yeah.
My mother had a complete sort of meltdown in the beginning and has turned out to be one of my staunchest supporters.
Great.
She's fabulous and stands by me, which
she
is
needed
wonderful.
To go through a process.
My kids needed to go through the process,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. What ages were they?
Gosh, the youngest was just a toddler when I first realised.
Right.
And they are 28 now, so...
So they've grown up with this story,
yeah,
haven't
absolutely.
They?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got several kids. Made 3, acquired 4.
Okay.
And they've all multiplied apart from the last one.
You have a small army at,
yeah,
home.
Yeah, small army. And my youngest, the 28-year-old, who's my own, is, as in I birthed.
Yeah.
That's a whole story as well.
Yeah.
Being on the side of the equation where you're not just holding someone's hand while they're birthing. I've been through that goddess mother experience. I've had it.
Isn't
I feel
that
incredibly
incredible?
Blessed and lucky to have had that,
yeah,
and not just watched it from the outside.
This is a whole other,
you know,
topic.
The universe knew what it was doing with me.
Yeah.
You know, it gave me all that I needed, but it was much later in life. And my youngest is among all of them. My son is bi, my eldest daughter is married lesbian, happily with an 11-year-old and an older kid. My youngest is trans non-binary. So, you know, out of 7 of them, statistically, 1 of them is trans non-binary.
Wow. Yeah. So you've gone through their own journey, but now they're all in good relationships.
Yes.
With the whole of everything.
Yes.
This is also
mega. I'm very blessed.
Mega.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
And also, like I said in the beginning when we were talking before we started filming, I'm a little older in the tooth, a little more thick-skinned. But we spent months agonising about what the kids were going to call me. Can't call me Dad. That space is already taken. Can't call me by my name because you lose something of the emotional connection,
right, yeah,
in that.
Yeah.
So people have come up with all sorts of names. My daughter-in-law is known as Bear Bear, as opposed to both being mum, you know. So, and 9 times out of 10, the kids tell you what they want to call you.
Mm.
Never mind, you can have an idea, but they're going to tell you anyway.
Mm.
But me and my older kids, my grown-up kids, all had the conversations over and over until I finally said, okay, I've got it.
Mm.
You would have a male nanny.
Mm.
You would have a male nurse. You would have a male PA with no compunction. You absolutely, so you just happen to have a male mum. Your mum just happens to be a bloke. So they still call me mum.
Brilliant.
Unless we're out in public when it could put me in danger,
yes,
then they'll call me DK.
Right.
But in all other circumstances, they call me mum.
It's so, I don't know, refreshing, this story.
Mm.
The thing that I'm hearing here is that you sat with it and you really did a process all of the possibilities and,
yeah,
actually what is my truth.
Yes.
And I think that's what I love in this, is that there is not one family or couple Correct. Or individual that will go through the same as the other.
Absolutely.
What we can do is talk more,
yeah.
share more, yeah. and there will be things that connect
yeah.
and things that don't connect. And the things that don't connect are helping you know more of what
Correct.
You don't want anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so my story isn't everybody's story.
No.
You know, my story is very unique, very different, and so is everybody's.
Mm.
You know, that's the point. The youngest, my non-binary one, doesn't actually call me mum often, calls me the parental unit, which I think is hilarious. So I call them offspring.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, we've had some things like that too. At the moment, I'm Buffski.
Oh.
By one.
Brilliant.
Bum bags from another. And then my son has decided to call me Beth.
Oh, right.
Which
okay.
I find weird and creepy.
Yeah,
and I don't like
weird.
It.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stop calling
yeah.
me Beth.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
that's your name. And I'm
yeah.
like, find me something weird, but not my name.
I'm
so
brilliant.
That's where we're at the moment.
Okay.
I want to get these questions out.
Yes. Feel free. We could talk about my story forever, but.
Your you know. Story is what I want to see on some sort of movie. And I think I'd have to have 3 or 4 Friday nights in a row to get through it. And it would be
wow.
utterly fascinating.
My oldest friend, Claire, who's the... Ironically, we were school friends. And she is now my son's mother-in-law because we both had kids at similar times.
Son's mother-in-law.
Yep.
Okay.
So my oldest friend is the mother of my daughter-in-law.
Oh, my
Which
God.
Is hilarious. We used to joke when they were kids of, wouldn't it be funny if... Because they played together as toddlers. And they did. They absolutely
I
fell
love
in love
it.
And married and had kids. So
I think when
it's
think
quite magic.
You've had you. I was just literally going to say you've had some magic dust sprinkled
yes.
on you, haven't you?
Claire used to say to me, whenever a new chapter emerged, you know, a new part of my story, there's another volume of the
I
book of
it.
Your life.
Yeah. I, you know, remember when we were growing up, your. Going to remember this even more than me because you're a lot older than me.
Shh, not that much, pretend.
The what was it called? This Is Your Life,
oh,
that
yes.
red book.
The big red book. We did that for my mother for her 50th.
Oh, I
yeah,
love that.
Yeah.
You would have to have like
several.
10 volumes.
Yeah. yeah,
they,
yeah,
would,
yeah,
they wouldn't several. Invite you because they'd be like, too much hard work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Writing Lemon's questions.
Go for it.
So, I, first of all, I'm going to ask you, range of terms. I don't know half of these.
Okay.
I thought I was all right. You can say pass if you like, even if it's like a bit boring. That's a bit boring. Don't need
okay.
that one. Yeah.
Okay.
Or that's obvious.
Yep. No. Nope.
Whatever
we'll
your
it.
Truth is.
Bring it on.
Are you comfortable?
Yeah. Shove up. All right. Yep. Shove your foot up. So
do you want
that
both
I'm,
my
oh,
feet?
I'm sliding.
Do you want both
yep.
my feet under your buttocks?
Perfect. Thank you. That's perfect.
I love how comfortable we are with each other. I mean, it's just a bum.
Quite so.
Right. Gender conformity.
That is what most people do. That is the socialisation. Gender conformity is no, kid, you can't take something off the pink shelf. It needs to be the blue shelf. Gender conformity is no, you can't wear a skirt. Don't be silly. Your friends will laugh at you. Gender conformity is fitting in with what socialisation says you should be.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you think, just a side question, that still now people are raising children very much in that?
What's the first question that people ask when a woman's pregnant?
What are you having?
What is it, boy or a girl?
Yeah.
So that they know what colour to buy.
Yeah.
It's absurd. It's before you're even born, your socialisation as male or female begins.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it is. There are the younger generations. Now, they're starting to get it. They're starting to really get it. And they are unpicking all of the social norms.
Yes.
And gender's one of those.
Yeah.
Which is why, I mean, there was a research product which proved something ridiculous, like 75% of kids at school are either non-heterosexual or non-gender conforming. You know, in some variation.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary, because they're unpicking it. They're saying, well, why do we need to be all of this
yeah.
and none of that?
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, in our day, that conversation was more about feminism, the true form of,
yeah.
you know,
yeah, yeah.
of being equal to,
yeah.
not better than, of having the choice to stay home and have kids, or the choice to go out and have a career,
yeah.
rather than the extreme version that came later.
Yeah.
So they're getting it more. So I've certainly, my younger stepdaughter, who's been married with a bunch of kids. I remember her daughter coming down the stairs one day in a princess dress, another day in a footy outfit, and she would literally announce, today I'm going to be a princess, or
yeah.
today I'm going to be whatever.
Yeah.
And the parents were great with it, fine,
yeah.
you be you, you do you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think my examples of younger generation parenting is much better. They're more likely to question it. In fact, they turned up to my eldest daughter's 40th birthday party last weekend with their girlfriend.
Brilliant. There you go.
So they are open and questioning, which is fabulous.
I think I do feel a lot of relief where I see parents just letting the children explore who they are.
Absolutely.
In their environment, not even just around gender, just around...
All of it. Not being a helicopter parent.
Exactly.
My son and his wife are doing a fabulous job, and I'm so proud of them. Every time
wow.
I see my youngest, my two-year-old granddaughter, every time I see her, I'm like, she has no attachment issues. She's quite happy to be palmed off to... She's got multiple grandparents, of course. And we go off and have fun and bring her back, and she's got no separation fear or any
so
of that.
Good.
And
refreshing.
They're just wonderful. Really good.
Gender expression.
Right. So if gender conformity is conforming to what socialization tells you a man or a woman or a boy or a girl should wear and look like and act like, gender expression is how you feel and want to express your gender. So
whatever.
You may be, it's not necessarily about transgender stuff either.
Okay.
So there's plenty of guys who are like, why can't men wear skirts? Why can't men wear makeup? Here's my shiny nails.
Heterosexual, not
that
to do with sexuality.
Is expression,
yeah,
nothing to do with sexuality or gender.
Yeah.
Just finally beginning to unpick, you know, in the way that sort of back in the 80s, lesbians would unpick it by wearing short hair and jeans, you know, and dock boots or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just that the expression is how you choose to express your gender. It doesn't have to mean that your gender is different to the one you were assigned at birth.
Yeah.
It just means that in my experience of woman, my expression is this.
Yeah.
This is how I want to be seen.
I like this.
Yeah?
I like this.
Okay.
Cisgender.
Certain portions of society who shall remain nameless would treat that as a slur. It is no more a slur than a scientific term.
Okay.
In the same way in science you get cis substances and trans substances. One is what it is and one is what it wasn't. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cis as a person, as a gender, literally means you relate to the gender you were assigned at birth.
Okay.
So they said, oh, it's a woman or it's a girl, and you relate to that and you feel, yes, that's me.
Yeah.
That's all cis means.
Yeah, okay.
It just means you align with the gender that you were told you were at birth.
Yes. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Transgender stroke trans. So
okay.
Someone said to me, are they the same thing?
Right. Trans is a bigger umbrella.
Yeah.
It's a complicated thing because no two people's story is the same.
Yes.
Okay. So the trans umbrella, they call it, includes everyone of any kind of transgender experience.
Okay.
And that could be non-binary, binary male, binary female, blah, blah, blah. It could be any of the above.
At any stage of it.
Literally, including, don't forget, there's a whole bunch of agender and non-gendered. And there's all sorts of, again, it's a spectrum.
Yeah.
And the trans umbrella includes everybody.
Right.
Transgender is more commonly used when someone is transitioning from one gender to another.
Thank you.
And that might be assigned female at birth, transitioning into male.
Yeah.
It might be assigned female at birth, coming somewhere else. Actually, I feel more non-binary. Yeah. It might be male assigned at birth, female, or non-binary, or anywhere, non-gender. You know.
You keep saying non-binary.
Yes.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
I think some people won't because they've already asked me.
Right. Brilliant. There are two commonly used words currently. One is gender fluid and one is non-binary. Not everybody uses trans as their part of their identity.
Okay.
So you'll find some non-binary people who say, actually, I don't relate to the word trans at all.
Right.
I just am non-binary. That's
right.
It. Gender fluid is someone like my granddaughter when she was younger was being very gender fluid, coming down as a princess one day. That can depend on your where you are in your hormone cycle, how much pain you're in that day, what mood you're in.
Yeah.
Literally, being gender fluid is about fluctuating between genders.
Yeah.
Non-binary is more complex. It's some people like to think of it as the middle. Well, obviously, if that's binary trans man, that's binary trans woman, obviously it's the bit in the middle. Not always. Some non-binary people literally don't buy into gender at all and might be considered agender.
Yeah.
They don't want a gender. They don't have it. They don't identify with it. Don't relate to it in any way, shape or form. Male, female, polka dot, Martian. None of it applies to me.
Yeah.
And for some people it is. Non-binary means I have masculine, I have feminine, I'm happy with both.
Is it offensive to say to someone who says I'm non-binary?
Yeah.
Because this was a parent... No, a child, teenager, said that their parents are really awkward around their non-binary friends.
Right, okay.
And my question to you, I'm thinking of that scenario, if the parents are feeling awkward, is it offensive for them to say to the non-binary friends, could you help me understand what I need to know so I'm not awkward? Is that offensive?
I think just about, and I can't speak for everyone, just about every single person of trans experience in any way, including non-binary, would be relieved if somebody says, I don't want to get it wrong, can you tell me what I need
Brilliant.
To know? Yeah?
Oh, I feel like relief falling
huge.
Through my body.
You've got to remember, the transgender community is just a portion of all of society.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. We, you know, if you're in a room of 1,000 people, there are going to be transgender people in there. You just won't know it. Yeah.
Right,
so
yeah.
That we can always tell. No, you can't.
Yes. Good point.
If I'm in a room full of people, nobody has a no.
Good
I
point.
Gave a lecture, a day-long workshop to a bunch of NHS surgeons and doctors on gender, and I didn't tell them. And they were all really like making notes and really wanting to learn from this fount of knowledge until I said, oh, and by the way, I'm a trans man. You could have heard a pin drop. Everybody's jaw fell.
I bet. Because they,
so, no, you can't always tell. That's total bollocks. Yeah. Anyway, where were we? So some people will take offence to anything.
They might be sensitive.
Some people may be sensitive, more sensitive. Some people are angry because of what life has put them through.
Yep.
Certainly currently with the socio-political climate. And you might rub up against that anger.
Yeah.
It's not directed at you. Mm. It's directed at what they're already suffering.
But what I'm hearing is it's far better to take the risk.
Don't come at them with things like, well, they, them is a plural. No, don't do it. Just accept. If somebody says, I'm married or I'm not married, you accept they're married or not married. Mm. If somebody says, my pronouns are they, accept their pronouns are they.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Yeah.
We do it all the time. People say, I get confused. It's too complicated because it's plural. No, we don't. We're in a pub. There's a hat left on the chair. Oh, someone's left their hat on the chair. I wonder where they...
Helpful way
they.
To think about it,
yeah. We use it as a singular when we don't know.
Yes.
So also, if you happen to be, for example, operating more in a queer community, head for they. They'll soon correct you if it's he or she.
Yeah, thank you. But another top tip there. Let's come on to the next one.
Okay, go for it.
Intersex.
Everybody loves this one because you don't know anyone intersex, right? If you're in that same room of 1,000 people, yes, you will. You just won't know. Because there are the same proportion of intersex people on this planet
then?
As there are redheads.
Wow. Right? How do you get these statistics?
It's all been well and truly
Amazing.
Documented and researched.
What does it mean?
There are many ways. So people think of intersex and they think of the old word... hermaphrodite.
They assume,
oh, you've got two lots of genitals.
Yes.
No, that isn't the case. There are as many ways to be intersex as there are to be transgender. And I often say, don't talk about us without talking to us. And I've done a lot of work with intersex people to make sure I got this shit right, okay? So there are many ways of being intersex. Many trans people are probably intersex. They just don't realise it because a lot of people never find out they're intersex until they're on the surgery table or on the mortuary slab.
Right.
Because it can be internal testes that you never know you've got.
Yeah.
As a fully developed, living in the world mum.
Yeah.
It can be internal ovaries as a man that you don't know until somebody happens to scan you because you've got an appendectomy going on or something. But it's not just physical. It is hormonal. It is chromosomal. There are so many different ways. There's a particular condition, for example, where basically you live and grow as a woman, but you're actually a man. But your body won't recognise the testosterone. So you don't know that until someone shows how many people do an actual hormone test.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, unless you're going through menopause or, you know, or your libido's gone down the toilet and you have to really press for it and push for it. So a lot of intersex people don't know that they're intersex.
Yeah, but are having a lot of experiences. I'm grateful for learning how many that's a true story.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite literally, as many as redheads are intersex.
Yeah.
Either hormonally, chromosomally, some conditions, and of course, genitalia as well.
Yeah. I know some of these so well. I think I'm assuming other people will, but well, let's just do it anyway.
Bang through.
Agender.
Okay, agender is somebody who doesn't feel they're either male or female.
Yeah. Thank you.
They're either, some people call it third gender.
And
some people say agender, i.e. no gender.
Gender dysphoria.
So that is a very specific medical label.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy called Dr. Mooney who wrote the guidelines for the NHS decades ago, and they're still using it today.
Oh, Mooney.
So he's done us so much harm, because there is a specific pathway to go through the NHS transition phases. So you have to tick this box, then this box, then this box, then this. And if you don't tick the boxes, you don't get the care. You don't get the access to care you need. One of the biggest points he made was gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria is still required to have a diagnosis that will put you on the transgender pathway, which is basically convincing a doctor and a shrink that you don't align with the gender that you've been given.
How long would that process take?
When I started, the waiting list was 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
The fact that so many more people, the percentage of trans people is a lot bigger than we've ever led to believe.
Yeah.
That means the waiting lists are now horrific, especially post-COVID. The waiting lists are anywhere between 7 and 20 years around the country. There's only 7 UK GICs, gender clinics. Not all trans people make it.
Yeah.
The level of suicidality in trans people is the biggest there is.
That's a question,
okay?
Actually.
So young men is also quite a high statistic now. Because actually it's really hard to live in this socialised world that they've put themselves in, that men have created. Young men are really struggling with that. So they're either going one way, Andrew Tate style, or the other way of just, I don't want to be here, it's horrible.
Wow, yeah.
And trans people, not all of them make it. It's why I'm a psychotherapist. It's why I work with a great amount of trans people, because my goal is to keep them alive long enough so that they can transition. And if that means going on your hormones by going private and paying a few hundred pounds to go private and paying for that prescription every month, if that's going to keep you alive,
it's
worth it.
Absolutely, yeah. What are we talking about?
See me, hear me, feel me.
See me, hear me, feel me.
So, for example, because I'm a shrink, they did some research back in the day, which wouldn't be allowed today. They separated hospital babies' nursery into two halves. One half was picked up and held while they were fed, and the other half were not. It was propped.
Yeah.
And guess which half thrived and grew. And yeah, that's the only thing we're born with is see me, hear me, feel me.
Yeah.
That's it, and we carry it all our lives. So kids that aren't seen and heard and felt are desperate to be seen and heard and felt, which is why teenagers disappear into the wallpaper, because I've got nothing of value to say. Obviously, nobody sees me, hears me, feel me. I'm not worth anything.
Mm.
Or they go the other way and behave really poorly, because any attention is better than none attention.
Yeah.
No attention.
Yeah.
And we carry it on into our adult lives with acing at our careers, being the best, achieving the highest grades, blah, 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 because anything that makes somebody give me affection or look me in the eye or recognize me in any way, see me, hear me, feel me.
Mm.
So when you talk to kids and say, no, you are not, you are literally telling them,
yeah,
I don't see you, I don't hear you, I don't feel you.
Yeah.
And that is the greatest harm. That's the greatest trauma that almost always comes up in my therapy room for everyone, not just for trans folk.
Oh, absolutely.
See me, hear me, feel me.
Yeah.
We fight for it. We all seek the relationship so that somebody at least can see me, hear me, feel me.
Yeah. What we're saying here
Even
is this.
It changes.
Exactly. Let them gender express.
Yes.
Let them express. Not just with
absolutely.
Gender, with everything. Let them experiment.
Yes.
Let them try. And watch and observe and just be present for them.
That's it.
Okay, let's continue. I'm loving this. we've done that one. Oh, gender incongruence.
Okay, that's the simple description of, I was told I was a woman at birth, that felt incongruent. It didn't feel true, didn't feel real.
The gender reassignment.
First thing I'm going to say about that is, if someone tells you they're trans, whether they've done anything about it or not.
Yeah.
Because polyamorous, for example, if you don't have a partner, it doesn't mean you're no longer, or gay. If you're gay and you don't have a partner, it doesn't mean you're no longer gay.
Yes.
Yeah? If you're trans, you're trans. Yeah. Now, some people, for all sorts of reasons, some are medical reasons, cannot physically transition.
Right.
Right? Some people are literally allergic to, or react very poorly to, made very ill by, hormones. So they can't do hormones.
Right.
So they have to make do with socially transitioning.
Okay.
By using a different name, by changing their hair.
Yeah.
Some people don't want to do any of that, and they don't.
Yeah.
They just tell you, and you have to accept that this person who looks to my eyes are telling me as a man is a woman, even if they've done nothing about it.
Yeah.
Some people will, some won't.
Yeah.
Surgery is a massive thing for anyone.
Mm.
Nobody goes for a boob job without thinking long and hard about it, about the consequences, about the suffering of the actual surgery and the healing and the recovery, never mind whether they're going to like it or not afterwards. Do you know the regret ratio for transgender surgeries, for gender affirmative surgeries, is smaller than the regret level for people who have knee surgeries? I mean, it's infinitesimal. It's so small.
There
are the odd one in a blue moon detransitioner, someone who says. However, a lot of detransitioner stories, you follow them in 10 years' time, they retransition.
Right.
Because they're actually detransitioning because it's too hard to live in this world currently as a transgender person. So actually, you know what? I give it up. I change my mind. Don't need any of it. And then later they realise they're deeply, deeply miserable and they transition anyway.
Wow.
It's the most common story of detransitioners.
Just on that, on this topic of transitioning, what is the time frame? I was going to say Spanish. Roughly. What is the time frame from starting that journey to being to the point where you've healed?
There is no easy answer. There's only 7 places in the UK in the NHS that do gender assignment stuff, gender dysphoria stuff. There's only 1 hospital in the UK that does lower surgery for transgender men. Literally, 1.
Okay.
Trans women surgeries are about 2 decades ahead, right? They're incredible now. They're fantastic because trans men didn't really recognise that that was a thing until later.
Right.
So it became a thing. I've heard of a trans woman. That means I can do that thing. Nobody had heard of a trans man.
Right.
Actually, I've got some fabulous black and white old history stuff that shows that they've always been here too.
Yeah,
just but they're just kept under the radar.
Yeah.
Most people were never discovered until they're on
the mortuary. And so the provision is that's why this provision is so different.
So the provision is really, really hard. Access to hormones, it's about the first appointment. Getting your first appointment at the GIC is like, I finally fucking made it. I'm finally on the path, and that can take 7 years. Nobody is going to want 7 years.
No.
They want to wait. And all this current dialogue about don't harm the children, you cannot harm them by letting them wear a bloody skirt or calling them Fred. You can by not allowing that to happen. Nobody prescribes hormones and nobody will do surgeries. It's illegal on minors. So the whole sort of driven dialogue of they're harming the children, they're mutilating these children's bodies. No, they're not.
No.
They can't. They're not allowed.
What is the age?
So there was a place in London, Tavistock, that was dealing with children, and they would get counselling and they would get therapy and they would get the help that they needed until they were of an age where they were allowed to have hormones. Now, almost always, that's when they're reached past the age of majority, when they're no longer a minor. There were very, very rare exceptions where someone has known since they were a 3-year-old and is still saying so at 15, 16, and they know their own mind and they've read everything. They are fully informed consent. Very occasionally that's happened.
Right.
But you're talking, you know, 1 in hundreds.
Yeah.
Most of them have to wait. And the irony is they'd get through Tavistock, they'd get through to that age, then they'd be put on the GSI list and have to wait the 7 years. So even if you give them all that nurturing care and help and support, they've still got to go through the GSC pathway.
I think what's just so evident from our talk right now is what you've already shared with me. Why would you choose this?
nobody would choose this. And that's the point. There is a different aspect of this. You talked about gender expression. I call it gender fuckery, which is where you can play with gender. Absolutely, you can play with it. That is a whole different thing.
Mm.
To be a transgender person is to literally paint a target on your back.
Yeah.
To be the object, not even a human, the object of hate. I receive death threats because I'm very out as being transgender. I'm very open about it. I'm happy to talk about it. And that's actually a permission giving exercise. For me, I do that so that people feel that they can dare to ask themselves.
Oh, I love that. I had one of the questions was about this.
But yeah.
One of the questions I had from someone was that I've heard, this is someone saying, I've heard that trans people face much higher rates of violence.
Yes.
And that really shocked me. And she said, why is this still happening? What is underneath those statistics?
Fear. Always fear. It's fear and not understanding. I'm getting my eyes arrested and taking those off.
What are they fearing?
Different from us. Different from us being the social norm.
Yeah.
So whether that be by race, by disability, by being transgender, by being queer, whatever it is, it's different from us. And people who don't understand that difference fear that difference.
Mm.
Hence homophobia, transphobia. You know, it's about fear.
Yeah.
I don't understand, therefore I'm afraid of it.
Yeah. Do you have compassion for people who are in that position?
I certainly have compassion for the fear. We're responsible for our own behaviour, all of us. So if you have fear, I will have all the compassion in the world and I will help you, I'll understand and I will try and teach you, try and educate to help you not be afraid.
Mm.
But if you feel fear and you objectify me and you, in some form, perform violence upon me, verbally or physically, then no, I'm not going to have compassion.
Thank you.
Because you're responsible for your feelings. I am more than happy to help.
Yeah.
I am not happy to be the object of abuse.
Yeah. I think, do you know, one of the greatest hearts I've had for this podcast is just over the years how I've seen in my work how much more judgmental we've become and more full of fear. And I kind of hope that we're evolving.
I know.
We don't seem to
you
be.
You would hope so. You would hope so.
I wanted this podcast to be somewhere where people would get stopped in their tracks and say, gosh, I've got another choice.
Yeah.
Could I actually face my fear? Can I just let people live the way they want to live?
Yeah.
What's the big deal here?
Yeah.
I might not like it. I might not understand
it. I might not feel comfortable.
I might not feel comfortable, but can I live in peace next door to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to this massive list. I mean, we're going to be here till it gets dark. One thing I didn't know, which you shared with me when we took a little break, was the Gillick
competence. Yeah.
And you've explained it to me, but can you?
Okay, so the Gillick competency was basically the idea that a minor could advocate for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It was a set of assessments which proved that a person who was a minor, who was under the age of adult consent, was actually competent enough to make their own choices for themselves, to advocate for themselves.
Is that still available now?
Yes, of course it's being fought because there's so much anti-trans stuff going on. It's being fought like everything else.
Is it getting worse?
It is a campaign. It's an absolute virulent campaign. It is incredibly moneyed. It's incredibly organised.
Who's behind this?
Some people like to use religion as the excuse to be hateful.
What do you believe?
I believe, like everything else, politics likes it when we fight with each other.
Right.
Because then the people at the top can carry on earning their billions and live their lush lives, and we're too busy fighting each other to turn around and say, hey, you guys, this is wrong. They are using everything at the moment. It's not just transgender. I mean, we joke that it starts with, like, first they came for, that poem, first they came for, and then there was nobody left for me.
Mm.
Trans were kind of the first targets, the big, big first targets. And now there's virulent racism in terms of immigration, in terms of just period racism. There's virulent ableism. You're less worthy as a human because, you know, you can't pay into the coffers of the people above.
Yeah.
And it only takes a false truth to spread, and it's picked up and picked up, and it becomes a contagion.
Yeah, because
so, for example, the language around they're mutilating the children. Mm. No, they're bloody not.
Yeah.
You can't. It's illegal. You're not allowed. They can't even get access to hormones.
Yeah.
There's a huge debate around puberty blockers, which they've now stopped for all minors, which is actually already causing, it literally has created an increase in suicidality of minors. Mm. Because all a blocker does is stop your going through puberty. What, until you become an adult so that you can make the damn choice for yourself. They've been prescribing puberty blockers for children for many, many years because people have precocious puberty. You don't want someone at 8 years old going through periods and boobs. So they are given puberty blockers. That's been perfectly calm, perfectly safe, because as soon as you stop the blocker, puberty kicks in. It's been used in the medical system for so many years, and it's only forbidden for trans.
But there's a sort of thing that goes back to gender expression.
Yep. It is literally completely reversible. All you're doing is stopping some young assigned male at birth from developing a beard. Brilliant. Giving them time until they're an adult, and then they can make their decision.
Where, what are we on? Let's think about this. I mean, again, it's like top surgery, bottom surgery.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's obvious, but top surgery is the top part of your body.
Absolutely. And for some trans women, hormones will give them boobs. And for some, it won't. So they might want a boob job to have boobs. For trans men, it varies massively depending on your body. So some people who are fairly slight, who have slim, small boobs, they can have an operation where basically the contents are removed and it's just reshaped to a male masculine line chest.
Yeah.
Most trans men end up with mastectomy of some form, double mastectomy, and that quite often, if they're bigger, will need nipple grafts. So they literally have to be cut off and replaced where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
They do a brilliant job now of knitting the nerves, but there's no guarantee that you'll get full sensation back afterwards. That's a sacrifice that you make.
Yeah.
You know, if you want a male chest, to pin it on, the expression came in my head. I've got finally got a chest to pin it on.
Brilliant.
Anyway, then, you know, nipple loss is a thing.
Yeah.
It's far less common now than it used to be, because they've got better and better at it, like everything else.
Yeah. Can I ask a personal question?
Yes.
Feel free to say no. Did you breastfeed?
I did.
That experience has given you absolute understanding of the full spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, I was going to say, privileged position.
It is. I mean, ironically, I understand the hesitance.
Because I know it's not been easy.
Being a trans person in this current world is not a privileged position.
No, and
however,
I didn't mean to say it so flippantly.
I have had the privilege of motherhood.
Mm.
And I do consider that a privilege. My children are the greatest achievement of
my life. But my thing was the privilege of having that full understanding.
Yeah. Men don't get that experience.
Yeah.
I did, which is incredible.
Is it?
So in hindsight, I can say that now. Mm. I'm really glad it happened the way it did.
Yeah.
Because I got to be on both sides of the fence.
Wow.
Got to experience what that is like, how powerful that is.
Yeah.
How terrifying, how beautiful. How magnificent and awful.
Yeah.
You know, I got the whole experience of it.
What I love about you is this energy of you're not resisting what life is. You're, you know, in the five principles of authentic relating, number one is welcome everything.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And that you live that.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit woo. I think you know this. I'm quite a lot woo.
I love
actually.
Woo.
When I finally realised what I needed to do, and that was scary and hard, I, of course, went to the powers that be to ask, you know, is this the right path for me? And was in no uncertain terms told that I needed to fully accept who I am, what I was, including long hair, including boobs, including I had to be 100% grateful and comfortable with what I had. The minute I achieved that 2 years later, and I genuinely was, they were like, off you go, you can do it now. I had to appreciate what I had in order to be given free rein and permission to change it.
And to be autonomous.
Yeah. It was really quite beautiful.
Isn't it?
I weren't happy about it at the time.
No.
I was most cross.
Yeah. What do you
but I did.
How would you describe what you align to as like your source in that, in a spiritual realm?
So I'm very eclectic in all things. I find the seeds of truth where I find them, and I don't really care what name it's got or where it came from. If it feels like seed of truth, if it resonates, I take it in. My spirituality, I certainly wouldn't call it religion, is mostly nature-based. It is mostly about the cycles of life. It is mostly about the human experience on the planet Earth, and it's about spirit. And also, there's a shitload of Buddhism in there, there's some Druidry in there, there's all sorts of stuff, you know, Buddhist, like, as it is, not as I wish it would be.
Right.
That kept me sane in that 2 years that I had to accept myself as I was.
Yeah, yeah.
So my spirituality is quite eclectic. People tend to refer to me as a shamanic practitioner, mm-hmm. because that's the word that currently most aligns with the nature and the animism that I operate from. As far as I'm concerned, I call it spirit. People can call it God and 100 different names of God and goddesses and all sorts of other things. We're all talking about the same bloody shit. It's the same energy. We just give it different pictures, different names, different pictures in our minds.
Yes.
But it's the same energy we came from and we return to.
Do you own a drum?
I not only own a drum, I have made my own drums, several, and I've run drum making workshops.
Brilliant.
So people can make their own drums.
You are officially woo.
I am officially woo. To be fair, I've run a self-development shamanic circle, annual circle for years, and long weekend workshops and full residential retreats.
Lovely.
All the woo, all the woo.
You're in a woo bath here, I can tell you. You're fully wooed welcome. anything on hair that what does deed poll, what does that?
Deed poll is just an easy, really, really easy way to change your name.
Okay. Oh yeah, I know
anyone
that.
Anyone can go online at any point and change their name.
Yes.
And it's often the first thing people do.
Yeah, because...
I no longer align with... So my birth name was this long and began with the letter K. At 12 years old, I so didn't align with it that I just used the letter K.
Right.
I told my parents, my doctors, the school, and everybody called me K. Just K from then on. Just the letter K. And it was only later in life, coming up through, as a lot of trans guys do, the dyke community, self-identified, everybody called me Daddy K, which got shortened to DK.
Ah.
And for years, people called me DK. So when it came to legally changing my name, I'm like, well, why fix what's not broken?
Yeah.
So I just renamed myself DK, because that's what everybody called me anyway. So that
that's
is actually
nice
my legal name. Not a lot of people know that. That's an exclusive.
I really like that. I love to know where names come from.
Mm.
You know, when you go to an event and often they'll just get straight into the event. I always, whenever I facilitate an event, the first thing I do is I ask everyone, just say your name in this space.
Yeah.
What's your name? Cross-dresser, we know it's what that is.
Yeah,
of.
Some people just enjoy wearing clothes of the opposite gender.
Not...
It doesn't necessarily mean they are the opposite gender.
Thank you, exactly.
They just want to wear the clothes.
Yeah.
And for some, that's a sexual fetish.
Mm.
And for some, it's not. It's just I want to let go of being a man. I want to wear a dress and feel soft and receptive.
Yeah.
Or I want to be a man and feel powerful and strong.
Yeah.
And for some, it's nothing to do with... Everybody assumes it's sexual fetish.
Yeah.
For some, it is.
Yeah.
But for lots, it's not.
Yeah. You mentioned this earlier, and actually I wanted to ask what this was, okay. But you used the word turf.
So I've tried to avoid using it.
Okay.
Because people don't like it.
Right.
A trans-exclusionary radical feminist. They're actually not feminists at all. They think they are, but they're disillusioned. They think trans women are men in dresses and they want to make their lives impossible.
Okay.
They are now excluding trans women from, well, the Supreme Court ruling, last year or the year before, last year I think, was horrific, where they decided within a certain act, a certain context, that a sex assigned at birth was the biological definition of that human.
Right.
So it's basically given the TERFs free rein to say trans women are men in dresses.
Okay.
They're not women at all. So it's, we talked earlier about feminism and its early roots and the point of it. The TERFs have lost that. They've lost the idea. It's not that they're protecting women and children from men in dresses.
Mm.
They've actually bought into the patriarchal, a man in a frock is not real, is fake, is something wrong, they're mentally something. That's men's language. It's not women's.
Yes, this upsets me too.
It is heartbreaking.
Yes.
And trans women have it harder right now. than trans men. Because the whole toilets argument, the whole toilets debate. Yes. Would you like me walking into, well, you would, but you know, most women wouldn't want me walking into the women's toilets to go to the loo.
Mm.
I have experiences of being chased out of a women's toilet with a broom.
Really?
I've had experiences where an old lady has spat at me because before I looked like this, I assumed I was safer in the women's.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
However, going into the men's at that point would have been really bloody dangerous for me.
Absolutely.
It would have been rape, abuse, whatever.
Yeah.
But I figured getting spat at was better than getting raped or murdered.
What do you think the answer is here with the toilet debate?
I think, do you actually care what gender uses your toilet at home? Get over it.
Yeah.
We all just want to pee.
Yeah.
You know, cubicles. Most toilets have cubicles. I still use cubicles in the men's. There's literally unisex toilets. There's no problem. Any venue you go to where there's unisex toilets, nobody has an issue with it.
No.
But according to the TERFs, trans women are men in dresses who are dangerous to their daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous to women and men. It's not true. It isn't true. A guy doesn't have to dress as a woman to go into the toilets to abuse somebody.
Mm.
He's not going to go to, certainly not going to go to the trouble of 7 years of waiting, hormones and surgeries in order to do so. That's just insane thinking.
Again, it just boils down to, this is just a fear within you. Work
literally
on the fear within you.
Correct.
Don't project it outwardly.
Correct.
And ruin people's lives.
Yep. Men abuse women. Trans women don't abuse women.
I am mindful of time and I'm mindful we're getting cold again.
Yes.
But I'm just going to scour these and think about...
I'm going to sit up again a little bit more.
This is a very common one, actually.
Okay.
I'm meeting someone for the first time. I might think they might be a different gender to what they look like and what my conditioned mindset tells me. How do I approach them? Because actually what I'm going to do, not me, by the way.
Yeah.
is slightly avoid them and not really know, and so I'm going to find myself feeling awkward.
Deal with your own shit. Sorry, deal with your own feelings. They're a human. They're just a bloody person. So talk to them as you would any other person. Mm. Hi, how are you? I've not seen you here before.
Mm.
What are you doing here? Are you a speaker or an attendee? Mm. Whatever, just make normal conversation with a normal human.
Mm.
If at some point you need to know what pronouns they use,
they'll tell you.
Either they'll tell you or ask.
So it's
just say, sorry, what pronouns? Got it. You know, that's it. Move on.
Yeah.
And if you get it wrong, this is the biggest thing, and this is probably what half your viewers are wanting to hear.
Mm.
If you get it wrong, if you're talking to someone and you accidentally say he when it's a she, or you say he when it's a they or she or whatever, if you get it wrong, the biggest mistake people make, the most well-meaning, who really, truly don't want to get it wrong, the mistake they make is effusive. Oh my God, I'm so awful. I'm such a bad person. I'm so sorry. Da, da, da. What happens is the trans person then has to make them feel better. And that is wrong. If you've made a mistake, all you do is, sorry, she, and carry on. Don't make it about you. Don't make it about your mistake. Oh, my mistake, she. Da, 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 da. Carry on.
Yeah.
Because the more fuss you make about it, the more the trans person is then put in the position of having to make you feel better.
Yes.
For making a mistake.
I have realised there is certain groups of, like, dyslexia sometimes. So I have, like, this slow processing in parts, not completely in all my life.
Yeah.
If I've known someone for a long time and they transition, I then have got a process problem. What I've learnt is there are many ways to communicate with my dear loved friends without actually even using
Using a pronoun at all. Absolutely.
And then I go through that for a while.
I actually know some trans people who use their name as their pronoun.
Right.
Who don't want a pronoun. They don't want he, she or they. They literally don't want that pronoun.
Yeah.
So use their name.
But can I say what you said right at the beginning is so helpful. For me, it's been a game changer of... We use they, them, anyway.
Absolutely.
It's already accessible in your brain.
Yep, as a individual thing.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, use they.
Yeah.
You know, someone's left their hat on the chair, they, hopefully they'll come back.
Yeah.
We use they in the singular when you don't know.
And it's the responsibility. This is another thing that frees me in my mind. It It's the responsibility of each of us to share what we need to share for us to be who we are.
Yeah.
So if I'm with you, out, not you actually, but let's think of, if I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure with you. Yeah. You're very clear and you're very vocal. Someone's not clear, they're not vocal. Yeah. I go into a bit of, woo. Then what I'll do is, knowing me, is I'll just ask, but if it's not me and I'm someone feeling a little bit insecure, there are so many ways of just being with that human being until they feel it's strong enough or important enough, or they have the safety with me.
To tell you.
To tell me.
Absolutely, 100%.
And
I
if
love
I keep
that.
Making mistakes, just be humble about it and say, I'm learning, please give me grace.
Yeah, yeah.
I love what you say, don't make it about you. Oh my God. No. And in fact, privately later, you can say, I've had many experiences where I've just gone, I'm really sorry about earlier.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I want to actually say it to you, than not say it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm an advocate for say it, don't say, don't not say it. Get it wrong, make mistakes, be humble, but don't make it about you.
That's right.
I'm just rethinking here just how much of a gift this is for people.
I hope so. I hope it helps educate.
Is there anywhere that people can go to find out these, what you and I might say are quite
absolutely,
basic things?
Absolutely. So what you're talking about is people who have good intention, good heart, and who want to not get it wrong, who want to get it right. You're talking about allies.
Mm.
Yeah? Be an ally. Be an ally. When someone makes a trans joke, fucking say something. Don't just sit there quietly, you know, don't look at me. Say so. That's not funny. That's cruel.
Yeah.
You know? Ha-ha, not funny.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is. You know, in your style, in your sense of humour. Actually, I'm not going to laugh because that was really shit.
Mm.
You know, whatever it is in your humour, I'm a bit back, not backwards and coming forward. So I probably use firmer language than some would.
Mm. I think it's important that we don't shame people. Just thinking about my son and his age group, they make these humorous things sometimes with no understanding of what they're actually saying.
Yeah.
I don't want to shame them for it.
Yeah, it's like gay was the word in fashion for a few years,
because
which meant shit.
Yeah.
And what?
Yeah.
You know?
And you actually just, you need to come to them and say, hey, do you realise this? Let's talk about it. Let's bring it into consciousness.
Yeah,
rather
yeah.
than shaming them.
Rather
but when it gets
unconscious.
To a certain age or stage of life, then I get a bit more, actually, you need to take some serious responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
The impact of what that can be is serious.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is
so
that
I'm
stage,
I'm older
isn't
and longer in the tooth. We've talked about that. Mm. So I can deal with a lot of mistakes pretty easily, and you know it happens that people I'll correct them and I do it nicely with a smile, because we all have that survival technique, don't we, of being nice even when we're saying oi, that wasn't okay. Probably 90 times out of 100, 9 out of 10, they're like, oh sorry, and carry, and we'll just carry on, and it's not a problem. The only time I resent it is when someone is, oh, I'm so sorry, and it's so awful, and I'm such a bad person, and I mean it so well, and blah, blah, blah. Then I'm like, I'm going to resent the hell out of you for making me look after you when you're the one that made the mistake.
Mm.
It's a tiny mistake. It matters not to me.
Mm.
It's this big.
Mm.
But you've just made it this big, and I'm the one who's got to make it better.
Mm.
That's not okay.
It's funny.
It's just about respecting someone's wishes.
Language is so funny, isn't it? How it has such... I don't like being called a wife.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I'm not bothered if anyone calls me a wife.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Language has impact. I think you've mentioned this already. Okay. Ally.
Yes. Allyship is profound. You asked me, where can people go? We got sidetracked.
That's right. Well done.
So an ally is someone who has good intention, good heart, well-meaning. You moved your feet, so I slid. An ally is literally someone who wants to... get it right, who wants to respect people.
Yeah.
It's as simple as
so
that.
So I'm an ally.
So, okay, this is going to sound really stupid because I know lots and I could give you actual websites. Google, how do I be an ally to trans people? Literally, you'll get Google's AI giving you a list of the top 10 things to do to be an ally. Then you'll get a whole list of websites which literally write articles on how to be an ally. This is how to stand up for your trans community. This is how to speak... You know, I find it difficult to challenge transgender jokes in the workplace. You'll get answers.
Oh my gosh, this has been so informative and confidence building, and may this really be supportive to everyone that can hear this. I want to ask you, as we're finishing our bath,
okay,
what do you want to say and share is your parting words at this time of life?
On this topic.
On this topic.
Okay.
That wasn't either of us farting, by the way. That was the sponge.
I know, I'm doing all the squirty things as well. If you tell me you're an introvert, I'm going to believe you. If you tell me you're spiritual, I'm going to believe you. If you tell me you've got one fake leg, I'm going to believe you. If someone tells you they're trans, just believe them. It's not that hard. It feels hard because you can see and feel the emotion in me. Just believe them. That's all. And so what if they change their mind down the line?
Thank you very much for driving 4 hours.
Oh, no. And 4 hours back home.
To be in this bath. How has it been for you?
It's been lovely. As I know you, and, you know, I was always going to come along and work with you. And the opportunity to just to counter some of the awful onslaught of the current campaign, the anti-trans campaign, that's in our newspapers every single day. Literally, there's research on it. Every single day it's in our newspapers about how to hate trans people. So just having the opportunity to undo some of those lies, that's what matters to me.
Yeah. May this, yeah, be a blessing to you, to me, to everyone that listens to it. You know, the heart of this podcast is to create more change to bring us into more peace.
I love the title, Biting Lemons, because you really get your teeth into stuff that's hard.
Yeah, thank you. It's been 7 years, and a lot of those years of not coming into this is because I've had fear.
Yeah.
And I'm facing my fear. So as I want to be an ally, I also want to stand up in my own life and say, I'm not going to hide who I am either.
I have two primary core drivers in life, me personally. Authenticity, being the truest version of you you can be.
Yeah.
And autonomy, your right to your life, your body, your choices.
I love it. This is going to be my next tattoo.
Fantastic. Yeah, I keep saying I should have that, authenticity and autonomy. I should have them. Tattoos.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I am cold now.
Yep.
I am going to get out.
Yes.
If you're ready to deepen your relationships and learn how to show up more authentically in every part of your life, we really encourage you to check out ART, Authentic Relating Training. It's available worldwide, online and in person, and you can get a nice discount through our affiliate link. We've all done it. It's incredible. It's changed the way that we live life fully. And if this podcast matters to you, your support genuinely keeps us alive and it helps us create this space. You can find everything that you need, links and details and discounts, on our website or in the bio below. Take care.